He had his mom get them for him from downstairs. He fumbled the small discs into his ears, turned on the radio, and turned up the volume. Music pounded in his head from a local rock station, and he felt his body begin to relax. But through that music, through the throbbing beat and the shrieking voices, Stephen thought he heard, for a moment, the voice's hard, cold chuckle. It happened at different times and in different parts of the house, but no one else ever heard it. Stephen began to wonder if the voice was perhaps in his head. Otherwise, why didn't anyone else hear it talking about the things it wanted to tell Stephen, about the things he needed to do? Why was he the only one? He saw things, too. Sort of. Sometimes he would catch a glimpse of something moving quickly to his right or left. Nothing more than a gray blur in his peripheral vision. When he turned toward it, there was nothing there. The first few times, it had happened so quickly that he thought he had imagined it, or that perhaps it had been Willie darting through the room in that quick, wiggly way he had. Then he realized that, whatever it was darting from behind one piece of furniture to another, as if to hide from him. Stephen told no one of what he'd seen, or at least thought he'd seen. Not even Stephanie. It seemed too vague to talk about. He felt silly enough for what he'd said already. But he also felt afraid. First the voice, which was becoming more ominous all the time, then the glimpses of something small and gray darting around him, hiding from him mockingly. What was next? That was what frightened Stephen. He didn't know what was next, but somehow, deep in his gut, in his bones, he knew there would be more. And he wasn't looking forward to it. With the summer winding down, it was time for Michael to come home and get ready to start another year of school. Around noon on Saturday, Al took the kids to the airport with him to get Michael, while Carmen stayed home and prepared a big meal. Carmen had been raised in a family that believed in celebrating things, big or small, with food. It was Labor Day weekend and she wanted to get it off to a good start, so she cooked up plenty of fried chicken and corn on the cob and hot rolls. She made a green salad, a potato salad, set out two kinds of chips, and made plenty of iced tea. Then, when she knew they would be home any time, she set all of it out buffet-style on the dining room table. She went to the kitchen, got a stack of plates from the cupboard, and put it at the end of the table, then put the silverware beside it. She was about to set out some napkins when the telephone rang. Carmen went into the living room to answer it. It was Wanda Jean.
"Has my boy got there yet?"
Wanda Jean asked.
"Not yet, Mom. I expect them any minute."
"How's Stephen?"
"Oh, the same. His treatments end in another week, unless the doctor says otherwise."
"What then?"
"Then we pray a lot."
Carmen explained she was in the middle of fixing a big lunch and promised to call back later. She hung up and headed toward the dining room, but froze halfway down the hall. Her feet coming to a halt on the wood floor, she stared at the dining room table. The stack of plates was gone, and so was the silverware. Carmen closed her eyes a moment, then opened them, half hoping to find that they had only been playing tricks on her, and the plates and silverware were still there after all. But they were not. Taking slow, almost cautious steps, she crossed the dining room and went into the kitchen, where she opened the cupboard. All the plates were stacked in their regular place. Her mouth opened as she frowned and made a noise as if she were about to speak, but she didn't. Instead, she closed the cupboard and pulled the silverware drawer open. The silverware she'd removed, or thought she'd removed, had been replaced. She closed her mouth, pressed her lips tightly together, and could hear her breaths coming rapidly through her nose. Slamming the drawer closed, she spun around, leaned back on the edge of the counter, and murmured half her thoughts aloud.
"That's all it was. I just thought I set them out, that's all. I just thought I did it, but I didn't, is all. Because it's really hot today, and with the cooking and the stress, there's been a lot of stress around here, and yeah, that's all it was. Just a little mistake."
There was suddenly a burst of sound and movement in the house, and Carmen started, clutching her chest with one hand and letting out a little yelp.
"Hey, Mom!"
Michael called, stomping through the hall and into the dining room, grinning into the kitchen at her. The others came in behind him, talking, laughing. Carmen took a deep breath, held the tiny crucifix around her neck between thumb and forefinger, and sent up a silent prayer. 6. Sleeping downstairs. The air grew cooler as Stephen went down the stairs, and it felt good against his skin. Carmen, Al, and Michael had been down there for a while, and on his way down, Stephen could hear an occasional exclamation from Michael.
Cool! Or, all right!
Obviously, he liked the basement in general, and his room in particular. Earlier, while the others were eating, Stephen had taken Mom aside and asked her to please not tell Michael about why he hadn't been sleeping downstairs.
Okay, but why?
She'd asked.
He'll find out sooner or later anyway.
Yeah, but I want to tell him. Probably tonight. Because I think I'd like to start sleeping down there. Tonight, I mean.
Really?
Yeah, now that Michael's home. But not alone.
What do you mean, alone? He'll be...
I mean, not in my room.
You want to share a room?
She'd frowned as she thought about that.
But you are each going to have your own room.
I know, Mom, but please,
he'd whispered.
I'll sleep down there, but not if I have to sleep in a room by myself.
You're still that scared of the basement?
She'd cocked her head, as if she found it hard to believe. He'd averted his eyes and just stood there without replying.
Okay,
she'd said.
I'll talk to Al about moving the bed. And he should probably ask Michael if he minds.
He won't,
Stephen had said. And he'd been right. In fact, Michael liked the idea. They'd moved Stephen's bed into Michael's room, and although neither bed had been slept in yet, Carmen put fresh sheets on them. Carmen and Al seemed pleased that Stephen had finally decided to sleep downstairs, even though he wanted to share a room with his brother. In fact, they seemed so pleased and relieved about it that Stephen was a little embarrassed.
Well, what do you think?
Al asked as Stephen came down the stairs. He looked around the room, at the beds, the dresser, the wood panel shelf that ran along three walls. The room looked as if it had been made to be a bedroom for two boys from the beginning. The problem was, of course, that Stephen knew that wasn't the case at all. It had been made to serve a much different, much darker purpose.
Looks great,
he said, smiling as he entered the room.
You two will have to fight over the beds, Carmen said, and I figured I'd let you decide where you wanted to put all your stuff, so you'll have to bring it in from the other room.
Thanks,
Stephen said, nodding at Al.
Sure, kiddo.
Carmen headed for the stairs.
Well, we're going to leave you to it.
She and Al were halfway up the stairs when she called back.
Leftovers okay for dinner?
Yeah, Mom,
Stephen said. When they were gone, the room fell silent, and the boys just stood there for a long moment.
So, how come you haven't been sleeping down here?
Michael asked. Stephen licked his dry lips, jerked his head back toward the French doors that led into his old room, and said,
I'll tell you while we're moving the stuff, but you've got to promise,
he added, holding up a rigid forefinger.
It's just between us, right?
Michael shrugged.
Yeah, sure.
So as they went into the next room and began moving Stephen's things, Stephen told his brother everything, that he'd been hearing some rather frightening voices since they'd moved in, that Stephanie said she'd seen a strange woman standing in her bedroom with arms open for an embrace, and, saving the most surprising fact for last, that the house used to be a funeral home.
Really?
Michael said with a grin.
Cool. I don't see what's so cool about it.
Michael's grin faltered a bit.
Well, I kind of think it is, you know? That they used to bring dead people in here, you mean? You think it's cool that they used to embalm corpses in here? Maybe in this room, for all we know?
The grin disappeared entirely as Michael put down a box of things and faced Stephen.
I didn't think of that,
he said quietly.
You think that's the reason for the voices you thought you heard? I didn't think I heard them, Michael. I did hear them. Jeez.
He turned and went back for another box of stuff, muttering,
Stephanie said you'd believe us, but I guess she was wrong. Oh, no, I didn't mean it that way,
Michael insisted, hurrying after him.
I believe you. I just wondered if, well, you know, it's kind of weird is all, you know?
They carried the last two boxes into the room, then sat on the floor and began to sort through the contents.
You think this place is haunted? Is that what you mean?
Michael asked.
All I meant was that I've been hearing this voice, and usually it's coming from down here, calling up the stairs for me.
What kind of voice is it? What does it say?
It's always a man's voice. Sometimes it sounds like Dad, but only when he's working in New York. Usually, it just calls my name.
Stephen turned his attention from the box in front of him to the room around him. He looked around slowly, a frown growing darker and deeper on his face as he spoke in nervous spurts.
It keeps saying it wants me to come down here, and I don't know, it says I have something to do and that we have to get to work, but it, well, it never says what.
Michael's smiles were gone. He didn't even look like he was enjoying the conversation now. He, too, had developed a frown as he listened to Stephen speak.
Then maybe we shouldn't live here,
Michael said after a long silence, his voice hushed.
Mom and Dad can't afford to move again. After all the medical bills I've made for them, they could probably barely afford to move in here.
How is your, how are you feeling, anyway? You never said anything earlier.
Stephen shrugged.
I'm feeling the same, I guess. And Mom told me it was cancer a long time ago, so you don't have to be afraid to say the word.
There was a silence between them then. It was such a curiously tense silence in which their eyes did not meet that Stephen wondered if he'd made a mistake in telling Michael about the voices, if his brother thought that he was crazy, that he'd been affected by his illness or by the treatments. Then,
so what are we going to do, Stephen? I mean, about the house, about the voices and the woman that Steph saw.
Michael tried to appear no more than curious, but Stephen could see a spark of fear in his eyes.
I don't know,
Stephen said casually, not wanting to frighten his brother any more than he had already.
Just wait and see what happens, I guess.
Michael nodded slowly and said,
wait. Yeah. Okay. We'll wait and see.
Smiling slightly, as if they'd been talking about what kind of turn the weather might or might not take, and not about strange voices calling out of the darkness. As the evening grew darker outside, Stephen became more and more anxious. He found himself fidgeting, unable to concentrate, even on the silliest television programs, and unable to stop looking at the clock. How late was it? How much longer before everyone would begin making their way to bed? Stephen decided he wouldn't go down until Michael was ready to go to bed. As stupid as it sounded, he didn't want to go down there to sleep alone. Not yet. Maybe later, after he'd been sleeping down there for a while, he'd be able to do it, but not yet. After watching a couple hours of television, during which he told everyone about things he'd done at Grandma's, Michael stood from where he'd been sitting on the floor and said,
I'm going to go to bed. I'm kind of tired.
For an instant, Stephen's mind raced. Would it look weird if I went down with him? Should I wait a while and then go down? But then he might be asleep, and I just might as well be alone. I'm not even tired yet.
Yeah, me too,
Stephen said, standing from the sofa slowly, as if he were weary and ready to sleep. After all the good nights were exchanged, Stephen followed Michael downstairs.
You never said which bed you wanted,
Stephen said on the way down.
Whichever one you don't want.
Well, I want whichever one you don't want. I mean, it's your room.
Michael laughed and said,
okay, I'll take the one by the wall.
At the bottom of the stairs, Stephen reached out to close the French doors without even giving it a thought. It wasn't quite successful, though, and they remained open just a few inches. He decided it was silly for him to feel that they needed to be closed, though, so he left them alone. Stephen started to undress right away, looking forward to lying down in a bed again. It had been a while. Once he was down to his shorts, he pulled back the covers, sat on the edge of the bed, and then saw Michael heading back up the stairs.
Where are you going?
Stephen asked, trying not to sound panicky.
Brush my teeth. Be right back.
Stephen's fingers dug into the mattress until his knuckles turned a yellowish white as he watched Michael go up the stairs, disappearing a bit at a time, first his head and shoulders, then his arms, torso, legs, feet, and Stephen was alone.
You think he's going to do okay?
Carmen asked. She was sitting at the end of the sofa. Al was in his recliner. He was watching television and didn't respond. Peter was asleep on the floor, and Stephanie was involved in the television program along with Al. They were watching an old Sinbad the Sailor movie. Carmen tried again.
Al, do you think Stephen's going to be okay about the house now?
Still no response. He just took a few swallows of his beer.
Al!
He turned to her suddenly, startled.
What?
He said quietly at first, then snapped.
What? I've been talking to you over here. I'm watching the movie, okay? What did you say? I asked if you think Stephen's going to be okay about the house now that he's moved downstairs with Michael.
He finished off the beer, then said, he'd better be. It'd be nice not to hear any more of that crap about voices.
He hasn't said much about it lately.
Not outright, but somehow he manages to make a remark now and then. Something that just suggests there's weird things going on in the house. Well, it's time he gets okay about the house, I think. He yawned, then held out the empty beer bottle.
You want to get me another one, hon?
Stephen looked down at his hands, still clutching the mattress's edge, and relaxed them. It seemed silly to just sit there and wait for Michael to get back. He'd only gone to brush his teeth. How long could that take? Not long enough for anything to happen. Besides, the lights were still on, so what could happen? The only darkness was on the other side of the French doors, pressing against the square panes of glass. He opened the drawer of the nightstand and got his Walkman, then lay back on the bed, pulling the sheet over him. After putting the small discs in his ears, he turned on his side and propped himself up on one elbow to browse through the radio stations and see what was playing. He watched the red needle move along the dial from station to station until he caught some movement with his peripheral vision, just a shadow-like hint of it, but enough to make him raise his head and look across the room at the French doors. The Walkman slipped from his hand and toppled off the edge of the bed to the floor, where it broke with a crack of plastic, jerking the earphones from his ears. He didn't move. For a while, Stephen couldn't move. He could only stare at the French doors, at the face that stared at him through the small opening between them. It was a young man's face, maybe in his early 20s, but pale. So pale, it looked unreal. Like the face of a white-painted mannequin. It was a long, gaunt face with deep, hollow cheeks and sunken, corpse-like eyes. It held no expression, just stared. The young man's hair was black and stringy and fell past his shoulders. Pale arms hung from the short sleeves of his dark shirt, and long, bony fingers twitched against his blue jeans. His colorless lips began to move slightly, silently, as if he were murmuring to himself. But worst of all, the thing that made Stephen feel as though he was losing his mind was the fact that the young man shimmered now and then, became transparent and almost disappeared before taking shape again, like a mirage, a vapor. Stephen stopped breathing for a long moment and felt his throat begin to close, as if it were swelling slowly, growing thicker and thicker, until he was sure he soon would be unable to breathe if he tried. To get up the stairs, he would have to pass within inches of the sickly young man behind the French doors. The white lips began to move a little faster, though the face remained expressionless, the eyes empty. One twitching, bony hand began to move upward, outward, to open one of the doors further. Stephen kicked at the sheet to get it off him, but his feet became tangled in it, and he struggled to get free as long, skeletal fingers curled around the edge of one of the doors. Stephen broke free of the sheet, tumbled off the bed, clambered to his feet, and shot for the stairs, hearing, for just a moment as he passed the young man, the dry, insect-like whispering sound coming from the thin lips. Then he ran up the stairs, taking them two at a time. When he reached the landing, he nearly collided with Michael, whose eyes widened with shock and concern as he watched Stephen run by. Stephen thumped down the hall and stumbled into the living room.
"Stephen!"
Carmen cried as he tripped and fell to his knees. She hurried to his side and put an arm around his shoulders.
"What's wrong? What's the matter? Stephen?"
He couldn't reply. His mouth had become dry and gummy, and words sounded like nothing more than senseless noises. When Michael came in behind him, Carmen asked,
"What happened to him?" "I don't know. I was coming out of the bathroom, and he just..." "Get him a glass of water."
By the time Michael returned with the water, everyone had gathered around Stephen, except for Peter, who was still sound asleep on the floor.
There was a man,
Stephen gasped, breathless, once he'd taken a few swallows of water.
He was on the other side of the French doors. Pale, really white, tall, with long black hair, staring at me.
Al turned and hurried out of the living room. They heard him going downstairs. They were silent as they waited, for something, for anything, that might tell them what was downstairs. Stephen drank some more water. Carmen chewed a thumbnail. Michael cracked his knuckles. All of them watched the doorway. Al's footsteps started back up the stairs. When he appeared in the doorway, his eyes looked tired, heavy. "There's nobody down there," he said. Stephen's eyes widened.
"But he was there. I saw him. A guy with long black hair, really pale, and he was, like, transparent."
"There was nobody there." Al's voice was suddenly firm, hard. "I went through the whole basement, Stephen. Now, transparent?" Al squinted at him, curious.
"You mean like a ghost?"
Stephen nodded. "Oh, come on, Stephen, you've got to stop this. I think we've all had enough. I mean, transparent people hanging around in doorways is enough, okay?" Although it didn't seem possible, Stephen's eyes grew even wider as he stared at Al.
"But I saw him. He was starting to come through the doors as I..."
"Stop it, Stephen," Al said, and it was not a request. Al's eyes hardened slightly. "There's nobody down there now, and there wasn't before, okay? You understand me?" Slowly, Stephen nodded, jaw slack, eyes still wide beneath raised eyebrows. "Now, why don't you go to bed?" Al said quietly.
I think I'd rather sleep on the sofa."
Al exhaled slowly. "This is a living room, Stephen, not a bedroom. It's time you started sleeping down there, with Michael. You've got a bed waiting for you. You've got all your stuff in the room. Come on, okay? Go back downstairs and go to bed." Stephen suddenly looked a bit more pale than usual.
"Really, I'd rather sleep up here on the..."
"Damn it, Stephen! Will you stop it?" Al snapped, closing his eyes for a moment. "Just stop it. Act your age." Stephen stared at Al for a moment, then stood slowly. He took the glass of water, turned, and left the room. The others listened as his footsteps retreated down the stairs.
"I think maybe you were a little rough on him, Al,"
Carmen said quietly.
"What would it hurt if he slept up here another night?"
"Yeah, and another night, and another night. Jeez, it's like having overnight company night after night with him out here. Whatever he thought he saw in the basement, there was nobody down there."
"I don't know,"
Michael said quietly, almost timidly.
"Stephen says he's been hearing voices in the house. Maybe he really did see..."
"He told you that?" Al interrupted. Michael nodded.
"Damn it,"
Al growled, spinning around and heading out of the room.
"Oh, come on, Al, leave him alone,"
Carmen said, but he ignored her. She and Michael followed him downstairs and entered the bedroom as he began to speak.
"Listen to me, Stephen,"
Al said, his voice low but quivering slightly with controlled anger.
"Whatever you think you see around here, whatever you think you hear, you just keep it to yourself from now on, all right?"
Stephen was lying in bed with a sheet over him, wearing his Walkman earphones. He stared at the ceiling and did not acknowledge Al's presence.
"You hear me?" Al continued. "You don't need to scare the other kids with your stories, and if you do, you're gonna wish you hadn't. You understand?"
After a while, Stephen nodded slightly. As Al went back upstairs, Carmen went to Stephen's side and bent down to give him a kiss.
"Sorry about that, hon. He's kind of tense tonight." "He's kind of drunk, you mean,"
Stephen whispered.
"He's not drunk, Stephen. He just doesn't want you to panic the kids is all. Go to sleep now, okay? Sleep well."
Michael went to his bed and sat on the edge after Carmen left.
"They don't believe you?"
he asked.
"I mean, they don't believe any of it?"
Stephen turned to him without expression and said flatly,
"Welcome home."
7. More visitors. During the next few days, Carmen found herself feeling very tense. Al had seemed angry all weekend, and he'd allowed it to come out Saturday night with Stephen. She was sure that living in a motel and driving all that way every weekend was taking its toll on him, but she thought he'd been a little rough on Stephen, and she felt it was her duty to make it up to the boy. Al's mood over the weekend had left a bad taste in her mouth, and after he'd gone, she did not feel rested or relaxed, as the weekend usually left her. She'd planned for this weekend to be especially fun, but it had been less enjoyable than most. Unfortunately, Stephen's claim that he'd seen a pale young man with long black hair down in the basement didn't make her feel any better. In fact, she suspected, although she tried not to admit it to herself, that Stephen's story was the biggest cause of her discomfort. Why? She'd asked herself several times. Why would a silly story like that make you so jumpy? But every time she asked herself that question, she remembered the plates and silverware returning to the cupboard and drawer from which she'd taken them. She tried again and again to tell herself that it had been a mistake, that she hadn't actually taken the plates from the cupboard or the silverware from the drawer, that she'd only thought she had, but she was never quite able to convince herself. She knew she'd gotten the plates and silverware, could still feel them in her hands when she thought about it, but somehow they had returned to the cupboard, to the drawer. Unable to dismiss it, she brought it up with Tanya as they drank iced tea on Tanya's front porch while the baby slept just inside.
"Yeah, I do that all the time," Tanya said. "It's like going all the way across the house for something and then forgetting what you were after once you get there. It's distraction is all it is. When you have stuff on your mind, you do stupid, embarrassing things like that. Don't worry about it, we all do it." "But I was so sure that I..." "Yeah, I know. I always feel that way. But I've gotten so used to it happening that I don't even think about it anymore."
Rather than talking about it any longer, Carmen felt it was time to change the subject. But although she didn't say as much, she did not agree with Tanya. That night, Monday night, Stephen and Michael went to bed early. They'd both been tired since Saturday night because neither of them had gotten much sleep. They spent much of their time Saturday and Sunday nights talking to one another in the dark. They talked about nothing in particular. Music, movies, what Michael had done at Grandma's, just anything that might get their minds off what Stephen had seen. So, come Monday night, they were exhausted. They knew they had only a week of summer left before they would have to go back to school, and they wanted to stay up late and watch television, but they couldn't stay awake. And yet, once they got into bed, they couldn't quite get to sleep. They lay on their backs and stared into the darkness, talking now and then in soft tones about the coming school year and about the new Schwarzenegger movie, when there was a sound in the room, and both boys lifted their heads from their pillows. Michael drew in a ragged, frightened gasp of breath. Carmen was in the kitchen fixing herself a cup of cocoa. She'd put Peter to bed and told Stephanie to go, and now she just wanted to relax and, eventually, get to sleep. She returned to the living room with her steaming cup and found Stephanie still on the floor scraping a crayon over a page in a coloring book.
"I thought I told you to go to bed," Carmen said.
"Can't I stay up a little longer? I'm not tired."
"You'll be tired in the morning when you have to go to school. And then I'll have to listen to you whine, so go. Now."
She softened her tone.
"Okay, hon?"
"Oh, all right, Mom."
Stephanie stood and gave Carmen a kiss, then went to her bedroom with her coloring book tucked under one arm. Carmen sat in Al's recliner and turned the television to Murder, She Wrote, leaning back in the recliner to relax. Stephen and Michael stared at the dresser against the wall across the room from their beds. On top of the dresser was a toy robot that belonged to Michael. Staring at the robot, touching it, examining it, were three men. They stood in the dark, tilting their heads this way and that, looking at the robot from different angles. One man, the tallest, wore a pinstriped suit and a fedora. The other two wore dark clothes that blended with the darkness in an indistinguishable, shadowy mass. Their voices hissed in the silence as the man in the suit picked up the robot and examined it. He turned and faced the boys. Neither Stephen nor Michael could move. The man holding the robot looked at them for a long time, and the other two, standing on either side of him, turned and did the same. they whispered, gesturing toward the boys, their words indistinguishable, but their voices sibilant, secretive. Suddenly the man in the suit spun around, raised the robot high above his head, and held it there, turning his eyes to Stephen.
"Toys,"
he hissed, smiling around teeth that looked grimy and broken.
"Mere toys."
Then he brought his arm down hard and smashed the robot on the top of the dresser. Stephen stared wildly as the man smashed the robot down again, and bits of its body scattered in the darkness, chittering against the walls and floor. One of the men laughed, a low, throaty chuckle, and Stephen blurted,
"Run!"
as he bounded from his bed and headed up the stairs, followed closely by Michael. The boys took two steps at a time, both of them screaming,
"Mom! Mom!"
Carmen spilled a drop of cocoa on her shirt and muttered,
"Oh, damn,"
as she leaned forward in the recliner, grimacing at the boys screaming.
"Okay,"
she said, setting her mug on the coffee table. "Okay,
okay."
The boys stumbled into the living room in their underwear, out of breath, saucered eyes, frantic, both of them talking at once.
"Mom, men, there are men down in the room right now, right now,"
Stephen screamed.
"My robot,"
Michael gasped.
"They broke my robot. They came out of nowhere and stop it this instant,"
Carmen shouted. The boys fell silent, their shoulders heaving as they tried to catch their breath.
"Now, what the hell are you talking, screaming about? And please, talk slowly and quietly and one at a time."
The boys glanced at one another, and Stephen said,
"There are three men down in our room, Mom. They were standing around the dresser fooling with Michael's Robbie, the robot, and..."
"Wait just a minute,"
Carmen said, holding up a hand.
"How did they get in?"
"They were just there,"
Michael said.
"But the windows are locked, and nobody came through the front door, so how..."
"Mom, they were talking about us,"
Stephen said,
"whispering to each other about us, laughing."
"Okay, okay, come on."
She walked between the boys, out of the living room and down the stairs. At the bottom, she flicked on the bedroom light and looked back up the stairs at the boys who stood at the top, huddled close together. She walked away from the stairs, then froze in the center of the room. What if there really was someone in the basement? She'd come down unarmed, unprepared, automatically assuming the boys had just scared each other. She felt her heartbeat speed up, felt her palms become moist and sticky. Moving slowly, cautiously, she looked around the room. The more she looked, the more she relaxed, and a little smile curled the corners of her mouth.
"There's nobody down here, you guys,"
she called over her shoulder, her relief disguised by her firm tone of voice. She heard their footsteps hurrying down the stairs. Her anger returned, and she said,
"Now exactly what the hell were you trying to..."
She stopped, when her eyes fell on Michael's robot on the dresser. It lay on its side. An arm and a leg were missing, and the transparent plastic cover that had been over the face was gone. Fragmented bits of black plastic were scattered over the top of the dresser and on the floor below.
"Did one of you do this?"
Carmen asked angrily as the boys came into the room.
"No, Mom, they did,"
Michael insisted.
"There was no one in this room but you two, so stop saying that."
"Mom,"
Michael said deliberately, as if he were speaking to a small child,
"the guy picked up the robot and..."
"Okay, hold it. Just hold it a second,"
Carmen said, holding up both palms. She studied the boys a moment. They not only looked sincere, they looked terrified. But it would have been impossible for anyone to get into the basement. She looked at the French doors. They were shut, with only darkness beyond them. All the windows were locked, she was certain of that. Well, pretty certain. No, they had to be making it up. At the very most, it was probably just the result of Stephen's telling Michael about all the voices he claimed to have heard. He probably scared the hell out of Michael, and, before they knew it, both their imaginations were running away with them. And Carmen was pretty sure she could prove it.
"Go upstairs a minute, Stephen,"
she said.
"What?"
"Just go upstairs and leave me with Michael. We won't be long."
Reluctantly, Stephen climbed the stairs, puzzled and a little angry.
"Okay, Michael,"
Carmen said, sitting on the edge of Stephen's bed and patting the mattress beside her.
"Sit down and tell me about it. Tell me everything you saw."
"Well, there were these three guys. They were standing over there by the dresser, fooling around with Robbie the robot and whispering to each other."
"What did they look like?
What were they wearing?"
Well, two of them were hard to see because they wore dark clothes and, well, the room was dark, so... But the one guy was wearing this suit. It was striped. Thin little stripes, kind of old-fashioned.
Pinstripes?
Yeah, and he wore a hat, an old-fashioned hat. The kind men wore in the old movies all the time.
What did they do?
They looked at the robot and whispered. Then they looked at us and whispered. One of them laughed. Then the guy in the suit said something about toys and picked up the robot and smashed it down on the dresser.
Where'd they go?
Michael shrugged.
I don't know. We ran.
And they just stood here and let you run after you'd seen them standing in your room busting up a toy? Doesn't that seem odd to you?
Maybe it's odd, but you wanted me to tell you what happened. That's what happened.
Carmen studied Michael's face, looking for some sign of guilt, for one of the familiar clues that he was lying. He was a lousy liar, always had been. Stephen could get away with it, but she'd only seen him use his poker face to pull pranks on her and Al. Harmless jokes that required a straight face until the payoff. Never anything as pointless as this. But she saw nothing in Michael's face that told her he was lying. So either he'd picked up his big brother's talent for keeping a straight face, or he was telling the truth.
Okay. Stay here, she said as she stood and started up the stairs.
You don't believe us, do you?
Michael asked softly. Carmen stopped and turned to him.
Just stay here, hon. I'll be back in a minute.
Upstairs, she found Stephen slumped on the sofa with his arms folded over his thin chest, looking dejected, as he whispered to Stephanie, who sat beside him, leaning closer. Stephen stopped, and Stephanie pulled away the moment Carmen entered the room.
I thought I sent you to bed, Steph, Carmen said.
Stephanie stood and headed for her room, saying,
I'm going, Mom, I'm going.
Carmen sat down beside Stephen.
Okay, I want you to tell me exactly what happened down there.
She listened carefully as he told her exactly the same thing Michael had told her. When she questioned him, what did they look like? What were they wearing? His answers were identical to Michael's, right down to what the man said. He said toys, mere toys. When he was finished, Carmen realized she was frowning. If the boys were lying, then they had to have made up the story in great detail before breaking the robot and telling her. Otherwise, their stories would not have been identical in every detail. A chill fell over her like a blanket as she seriously considered for the first time the possibility that there had been three men in the boys' room. Why would they come in just to whisper to one another right in front of Stephen and Michael, break a toy robot, then leave? That was what she found so frightening about it. It was completely senseless. Should I call the police, she wondered. But what if they come and it turns out the boys are lying? She decided that if three men had indeed broken into the house, there would have to be some sign of entry somewhere, and it would have to be down in the basement.
Okay, she said decisively as she stood. That's all I wanted to know.
She left the room, and as she started down the stairs, she heard Stephen call,
What are you going to do?
But she didn't respond. Downstairs, she was asked the same question by Michael.
Just stay here,
she said as she opened the French doors and went into the next room, reaching out to flick on the light. She looked around the room that was supposed to be Stephen's, saw that the two windows were still locked, and went into the wide hallway beyond, turning on another light. She checked the tool room at the end of the hall. The window there was untouched, too. She walked up the ramp at the opposite end of the hall and checked the floor. Locked. In the next room, she tried not to look at the plank covering the blood tank, tried to avoid even thinking about it, and devoted all her attention to the two windows there. Nothing had been broken or pried open. She turned to the doorway that led to the morgue. Although she hadn't admitted it to Al or anyone else, she didn't like to go in there. She didn't think it was evil or anything like that. It just made her uncomfortable. But there were three windows in there. And although she was pretty sure the boys had been pulling her chain, she supposed she should check those, too. With a sigh, she walked into the dingy room and turned on the light. It was much more tolerable since Al had painted it, but still. She checked the window across from the door, then the two on the back wall. There were footsteps behind her.
Michael,
she said.
There's no way anyone could have...
She turned, and her voice caught in her throat, and she froze in place, mouth open, as the air around her became icy cold, as if she were standing in front of an open freezer, and just as she turned, she felt someone brush by her, rubbing against her only slightly, and felt the shift in the cold air as someone passed. There was no one there. Stephen went downstairs to find Michael sitting on the edge of his bed, frowning as he stared intensely through the open French doors. The light was on in the next room.
"Where's Mom?"
Stephen asked. Michael nodded toward the doors.
"She went back there. I think she's..."
Suddenly, they heard a rush of movement in another part of the basement. Footsteps, a rapid series of clicks as the lights were turned off, doors slamming, and Carmen walked quickly through the next door, flicked off the light as she came out and closed the French doors hard. For a moment, Stephen thought she might scream. There was an odd look on her face, one he'd never seen before, one he thought at first was abject terror. Then she stood before them, set her jaw, and put her fists on her hips.
"There was no one in here tonight. You understand?"
she said, her voice low but unsteady.
"No windows or locks were broken. Everything's closed up. No one was in here. Now, if you thought that was funny, you're wrong. And if you do anything like that again, you're both gonna be in big trouble."
She spun away from them and stomped up the stairs. Stephen and Michael exchanged a silent glance. Then Stephen called,
"Mom, there really was...
I don't want to hear it, Stephen,"
she snapped, turning back and pointing a finger at him.
"I told you a long time ago to keep your stories to yourself. But you had to go and tell Michael, and you got him all worked up, and now you're both upset, which is exactly what I said would happen, remember? Well, remember?"
Slowly, Stephen nodded. Carmen started up the stairs again. Stephen turned to Michael, released a long sigh, then started slowly up the stairs behind his mom.
"Where do you think you're going?"
she asked over her shoulder.
I was just going to come up and watch a little..."
"You're going to bed, is what you're going to do. Both of you. And I don't want to hear a word from either of you. Got it?"
"Can I at least come get a glass of water?"
Stephen asked quietly.
"Yeah. Yeah, go ahead."
He waited on the step until she was gone, then turned to Michael again.
"Boy,"
Michael whispered.
"She's pissed. Or something,"
Stephen said before going upstairs. Carmen went into the living room and flopped into the recliner. The picture on the television screen disappeared in a blur of colors as tears stung her eyes. She sucked in a deep breath, wiped her eyes quickly, and grabbed her pack of Marlboros from the end table. Her hands trembled as she lit her cigarette, and she shook the match harder than usual, as if to shake the tremors out of her bones. She leaned her head back, closed her eyes, and savored her anger. She was angry because, with their vivid story and their wide, frightened eyes, the boys had managed to convince her that strangers had been in the house. Three of them. She'd allowed her imagination to get caught up with her son's.
"Yeah,"
she breathed, thinking.
"That's all it was. Just my imagination. And that stupid story of theirs. Right?"
But the tiny little voice of her conscience, that usually spoke from deep within her mind, remained silent. 8. School's in.
"Come on, you guys, out of bed!"
Carmen shouted down the staircase, clapping her hands sharply 3 times. Stephen held his pillow over his head, but he heard a muffled groan from the direction of Michael's bed. Then a groggy,
"Summer's over."
There were sounds of yawning and sighing as they stirred, sat up, and looked around with puffy eyes.
"You want to shower first?"
Michael mumbled.
"Uh-uh. Go ahead."
"Come on, you're going to be late,"
Carmen called.
"How come?"
Michael replied as he trudged up the stairs.
"'Cause my alarm clock didn't go off, that's how come. Breakfast is ready."
Stephen flopped onto his back, rubbed his eyes, then stared at the ceiling. He would not be going to school right away like Michael and Stephanie. Instead, he would have to go to the hospital for his treatment. Last week, Mom had met with the principal of the high school Stephen would be attending, as well as one of the counselors. She'd explained the learning problems he had faced while going to school in Hurleyville and told them of his illness and that he would be late for school every day the first week so he could get his treatments. She'd said they were very understanding and had assured her that they would do everything possible to see that he was comfortable and that his problems were dealt with properly. Stephen had no way of knowing, of course, if they were sincere or not, but he hoped for the best. School was hard enough by itself, but going to a new school with total strangers made it even harder. He certainly didn't need any more trouble. When it came right down to it, he didn't need anything other than those treatments. They were enough trouble all by themselves, thank you very much. He despised them even more than the doctors and nurses he had to deal with every day. There was nothing particularly wrong with them, except that they administered the treatments. Each day he was put under a sinister-looking contraption that resembled an X-ray machine, only it was bigger and uglier and more threatening. The worst part was being abandoned by everyone while he was exposed to radiation. If they were all afraid of it, why were they leaving him in there? He'd had a nightmare, several times, in fact, in which everyone left him in that sterile white room beneath that ominous machine, and they never came back. Oh well, just a few more days, and then, well, as Dr. Simon said, and then we'll see. Stephen couldn't wait for the treatments to be over, and hoped he'd never have to have them again. He could think of nothing worse.
Stephen.
Nothing except that voice. He sat up on the bed and listened.
Stephen, are you ready?
He turned toward the French doors but saw nothing through the glass panes.
Are you ready, Stephen?
It was the same male voice, but now it was coming from another part of the basement.
I'm waiting, Stephen.
Each time it spoke, it sounded closer. Staring through the panes, Stephen thought he saw something, just a faint sign of movement, a shadow perhaps, a shadow falling through the open door across the next room. He shot from the bed and scrambled around the room, grabbing pants, a shirt, shoes, then,
time is wasting, Stephen.
He raced up the stairs, the sound of his breath loud in his ears, rounded the banister and hurried down the hall, his clothes clutched to his chest. Carmen stepped out of the kitchen in front of him, and they collided.
Stephen!
She snapped, more frustrated than angry.
What are you doing?
He started to speak, then snapped his mouth shut and just stared at her, trying not to tremble. She held up a rigid index finger and said,
I don't want to hear it, Stephen. Not now, not ever, but especially not now. This morning's been bad enough already. Go eat your breakfast. It's on the table.
She hurried past him and went into her bedroom. Stephen stood in the hallway and listened, but all he heard was the shower. Relieved, but still tense, he headed for the dining room. Carmen could not understand what had gone wrong with the morning. She knew she'd set her alarm for 7 o'clock, but when she'd finally dragged herself out of a sound sleep, she found that the alarm button on top of the clock was still in the alarm on position, but the clock had been set for 12, and she was 40 minutes late. After waking everyone urgently, she'd tossed a quick breakfast together, thrown on some clothes — she always felt more awake when she was dressed — set her purse and keys on the kitchen counter so she'd be ready to take Stephen to the hospital, and somehow managed to get Stephanie and Michael fed and dressed in time to meet their bus, but not before asking them, did any of you fool around with my alarm clock? They'd all looked at her with puzzled expressions and said no.
Okay, just wondered.
Once Stephanie and Michael had gone, she was left with Stephen, who was even more quiet than usual, and Peter, who couldn't stop talking about the day when he would be able to ride the school in a big yellow bus, too. Carmen sat across the dining room table from Stephen and said,
well, how about we go to the hospital and get this over with, so you can get to school?
His hair, wet from his shower, was combed straight back and clung to his head, making his thin face look almost skull-like.
Do I have to go straight to school afterwards?
Of course not. You can come back here if you want, relax, recover. Then I'll take you to school. In fact, if you don't feel like going at all, that's fine too. It's only for this week, and they know all about it at school. It's up to you.
He nodded slowly, stared at the tabletop for a long moment, then looked at her, lips parted slightly, as if he were about to say something. Then he seemed to think better of it, closed his mouth, and muttered,
"Okay, let's go."
When everyone was ready, Carmen went into the kitchen to get her purse and keys. They were gone. She stared at the empty space on the counter where she had set them as Peter tugged on her hand and said,
"Mommy, I'm pretending you're taking me to school."
"All right, where's my purse?" she said. Then louder, "Stephen, have you seen my purse?"
"No,"
he called from the living room. "Well, it was right here on the counter with my keys, and now they're gone, so look for them, okay?"
"Where'd you put them?"
"Right here," she snapped.
"Okay, okay, I'll look."
They looked. They searched the entire upper floor of the house, but the purse and keys were nowhere to be found. Carmen was near tears when she met Stephen in the dining room.
"Think they might be downstairs?"
Stephen asked.
"I haven't been downstairs this morning."
"Okay, just asked."
But that question made Carmen pause. She frowned as she thought about it. Then, against her better judgment, knowing her things couldn't possibly be down there because she hadn't been down there, she went downstairs. And a few steps from the bottom, she froze. Her purse and car keys were on Stephen's bed. She stared at her fists for a long time before clenching them at her sides and calling, "Stephen! Stephen, get down here right now!" Carmen did not turn when she heard him coming down the stairs. She continued to stare at her purse and keys on the bed. When his footsteps stopped, she pointed at the bed and said, "Did you put them there?"
No.
"Then how did they get there?"
I don't know.
Finally, she turned to him, glowering.
"Stephen, this has got to stop," she said,
her voice almost a whisper, quivering with anger.
"I mean it. I don't know what you're trying to do, but whatever it is, I'm sick of it."
He stared at her, slack-jawed and horrified.
But I didn't...
"Shut up," she growled through clenched teeth. "I don't want to talk about it. Just see to it that this crap stops now, Stephen. I'm serious. If you're still pulling this stuff when your dad moves home, you're going to be sorry, because he won't put up with it, and neither will I."
She crossed the room, swept the purse and keys off the bed, and started up the stairs, calling back,
"Come on, let's go."
They didn't speak for a while. Peter was the only one who did any talking, babbling on about how he was pretending Mommy was taking him to school. Once they'd been on the road for a while, Carmen felt herself begin to relax. Other thoughts began to crowd her mind, making it easy for her to forget about her purse and keys being moved downstairs. Along with those thoughts came guilt.
"I'm sorry for shouting at you like that, Stephen," she said quietly. "But you made me very angry."
He turned to her suddenly and said,
"But I didn't..."
Then stopped just as suddenly and faced front. He said nothing more. Carmen was relieved by his silence. She was glad he'd thought better of denying it once again. She really did not want to hear it, because the quiet voice in the back of her mind kept whispering insistently that Stephen's denial might very well be the truth. 9. Sleepless Thoughts. Carmen could not sleep, so she sat at the dining room table, her favorite spot in the house, and smoked as she thumbed absently through a back issue of Vanity Fair and half listened to the radio call-in talk show that played softly. Once Stephen's treatments had come to an end, for the time being at least, Carmen expected him to change. For the better, of course. He'd been so quiet and brooding since they'd moved into the apartment, so unlike himself. She told herself it was due to his illness, and perhaps even more so, because of the grueling daily treatments for it. But the only change she noticed in him during the weeks following his final treatment was that his mood seemed to grow quietly and gradually darker. At least Stephen had Jason to cheer him up. Jason's parents both worked, and he was alone a lot, so he'd started spending most of his time at their house. Carmen didn't mind. She didn't like the thought of the boys being alone so much,
so she tried to make him feel at home. Although she was glad that Stephen had a friend, Carmen was disturbed to see that the only time Stephen seemed truly happy was when Jason was around. Otherwise, he was silent, depressive, and if she asked him what was wrong, he made no more than a vague monosyllabic reply. She worried about him, but told herself that he'd been through a lot and might not be through all of it yet. As long as he had a friend who made him happy and was doing well in school, she was satisfied. The only problem was Jason. There was nothing wrong with him that she could put her finger on. He was a nice enough boy, friendly and polite when spoken to, but otherwise pretty quiet. He just seemed different, like the kind of boy who might find it difficult to make friends. And yet he and Stephen had hit it off famously. Oh well, so they were friends. As long as they weren't knocking over liquor stores or burning down buildings for kicks, what was the harm? You're just being a mother, she told herself. Too much of a mother. She wasn't so hard on herself when it came to Stephen's idea that there was something evil about the house. Since Michael had picked up on it, Carmen often found the boys and Stephanie whispering among themselves, only to fall silent when they found they weren't alone. That had been going on for some time between Stephen and Stephanie, of course, but since Michael had come home, it seemed to happen more often. It got on her nerves, but she kept her feelings to herself. On the weekends, Al didn't seem to notice the children whispering secretively. His mind was on other things. 106 miles of driving every weekend was taking a toll on him, as was the stress of knowing he would be taking a step down and making less money once his transfer went through, making their financial bind even tighter than it was already. When he was home, they didn't talk about anything important or too serious. He'd go fishing, although Stephen didn't seem interested in going with him anymore, or spend time watching television. When they made love, he acted distant, preoccupied, and he didn't seem to be sleeping well at night either. The last time he'd been home, Carmen had awakened very early on Saturday morning to find herself alone in bed. A couple minutes later, he'd come into the bedroom and gotten back into bed looking worried, his face twisted in a frown of creases made to look even deeper by the faint glow of moonlight outside the window.
"What's the matter?" Carmen had asked.
Her voice startled him, and he looked at her for a moment, that frown clinging to his face, then said,
Nothing. Go back to sleep."
So Carmen had more than her share of things to worry about, Stephen, his illness, and no matter how hard she tried not to, his friendship with Jason as well. And money, and Al. But for the first time she could remember, she was actually relieved to have those worries. Those worries gave her a welcome excuse for some of the odd things she'd been doing. Things she thought she'd been doing, anyway. There was, of course, the voice she'd heard that day while she was alone in the house. She'd chalked that up to missing Al. Then the plates and silverware had appeared to take themselves back into the kitchen the day Michael came home, and her purse had disappeared and her car keys had gone from the kitchen counter to Stephen's bed downstairs. Last week she'd found the bathroom faucet running and steam billowing up from the scalding water. Yesterday she thought she'd bought 2 6-packs of soda, even remembered putting them in the refrigerator. That evening they were gone. None of the kids had drunk them, hadn't even seen them. She tried to find the receipt, knowing she'd bought them and wanting to prove it to herself, but she couldn't. She'd blamed it all on her preoccupation, told herself she'd just made a few absent-minded mistakes. But somehow, that just didn't work. So she buried it all by worrying about everything else. As Carmen lit another cigarette, a female caller on the radio said,
"Well, my problem is, like, I'm not sure of myself, you know? I'm not sure who I am. Like, am I a wife? Am I a mother? Am I a daughter? And no one seems to understand the crisis I'm having, or the space that I need to work it all out."
Carmen glanced at the radio and blew smoke as she chuckled coldly. "Get a life, lady." Then she went back to her magazine. At roughly the same time, Al could not sleep either. He sat up in his motel room, drinking a beer and smoking a cigarette. The room was dark except for the flickering light from the television, which was playing silently. Al was watching the images on the screen without really seeing them. Instead, he was, like Carmen, lost in his thoughts about his last visit home.
he could not get it out of his mind. He'd been thinking about it on the job, as well as off. Even going to the occasional movie in the evening failed to stop the constant replay of the memory. Oh, he had plenty of other things to worry about, there was no doubt about that. Stephen's illness, the gradual change in his personality, and Al wasn't sure he liked Stephen's friendship with that odd kid Jason, although he hadn't said as much to Carmen and was unaware that she sometimes felt the same way. And of course, there was the matter of money. He would be getting less pay soon, and they had to struggle enough as it was to make his current salary cover everything. But in spite of all that, it was last weekend that weighed the heaviest on him. The first thing had happened on Friday night. He'd been awakened quite suddenly by the sound of movement and voices in the house. He lay in bed for a while, listening,